Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl.
And I'm Liz June.
And this is
Neat.
It's a weekly boozecast.
It's a history lesson with a twist.
Well, how you doing today?
I'm pretty good. Yeah.
You moved.
I moved. I did move. It's slowly coming together. We're not rushing anything because we still have to paint. We want to paint. We want to make it like a home. We both painted our rooms, and then we want to paint our office and the hallway and the living room situation because the color that is currently in there is like, it is like a neutral color. It's like a white adjacent, but it's like towards the blue.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. It's like, actually, when we were looking at, when we went to Home Depot and we're looking at like colors that we could have that were like neutral, but not white. Literally, if you ask Home Depot, like, okay, what are all of the like white adjacent things, options that I can have? They hand you a book.
I believe that.
Like a booklet, and you like open it up and there's like 40 different options of like versions of white and off-white. I believe that this one, the one that I recognized as the color that is on our walls, was like ice sculpture blue.
Oh, that's like weird. Usually like the color you walk into at apartments, it's not quite white. It's like a warm white. It's
yeah.
like eggshell or like,
yes. Yeah. Like warm white is, I think that is the norm of the off-white genre.
The cold white is a surprise.
Yes, cold white is a surprise, and it doesn't feel good.
No.
You know, so we chose like a sandy sort of off-white.
Oh, that's nice.
So it does have a little bit of warmth. So we haven't rushed to put things away because we know we're going to paint and like that's going to feel really nice. So it's just like slowly coming together. We don't have Wi-Fi yet. So what I did to like pass the time while I was putting stuff away, I wanted to start Legend of Korra. I walked by my old place and like stood outside with my iPad and used the Wi-Fi of my old apartment that I did pay for.
Right.
To download season 1 and 2 of Legends of Korra. Avatar. Yeah. And it feels good because it's like it feels appropriate to watch because like Legends of Korra is all about like spirits. Like spirits being able to be influenced by light and dark and like by your energy. And yeah, it feels very appropriate.
You're feeling very now with Legend of Korra.
Yes. I feel like Avatar is escapism, but it's also so... It's always relevant still.
Wow, you've got strong feelings about Avatar.
I do have strong... Like, I don't really go that hard for most shows, but, like, my animations, I really... Mm. I have opinions about cartoons, guys.
That's fine. I think you're in good company.
Yeah. What about you? What's... how has your timeless time been spent?
I've been constructing, like, artificial structure in my life.
Okay.
Because I don't have any real structure in my life. You know, like, I'm becoming one of those people that has, like, a nighttime routine.
Oh!
And, I mean, this is... I think it's normal by... I don't know, to be an adult, you have one, but I've somehow made it to my 30s being someone that still just stays awake until I'm like, I don't understand, I can't stay awake anymore, and then I fall asleep in my clothes. Like, shoes on, weird place in my apartment.
You don't have the moment of, it's time to go to bed now.
Never. That's not a thought that I've ever allowed myself to have. I mean, probably for, like, unhealthy reasons. Usually I just work until,
right.
You know, like,
you work until you're dead.
Yeah, like, I don't...
dead tired.
You know, because I obviously not working my bar job, it's odd to see how much I still have to do. Like, I still have a lot of work to do between,
right.
Like, you know, like, art stuff, freelance, like, 2 podcasts, like, the research, the live streams. I'm like, I'm still pretty busy with stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
And I was layering on that, like, you know, 4-5 days a week, like, visiting the bar or working shifts or doing prep or stuff like that. And like I'm just kind of realizing like, oh, I already had like a full work life.
Oh, yeah.
Just times two. So, but it is nice to have that, you know, that time to just do normal human things.
Yeah.
Take off your shoes before you fall asleep.
Oh, yeah.
And not, like, on the couch. Like, in the bed.
Right. Like, and with intention. Like, what? I intended to go to bed, and now I'm going to bed.
The lights are off. My contacts are out of my head.
Oh,
it's
a whole new world. I'm impressed. Well, yeah. Your skin looks great.
Oh, thank you. I don't even know if I'm using the right things. I just, like, got things, the words that I've heard, like, toner, like, moisturizer.
Yes.
A face wash. I'm not taking off, like, not even, I don't, I haven't
you know what
take
I,
off makeup.
Like, yeah, yeah. You know what I've heard is actually, like, good and invigorating for your skin?
Oh, I thought you were going to say coffee.
I am going to say coffee. I haven't tried it yet. Well, actually, I have. I have. It's a pretty simple, like, little face mask to do coffee grounds with a little bit of coconut oil if you make your own coffee.
I would say I made a coffee scrub for myself. It was actually a whiskey coffee scrub.
Oh.
It was a whiskey coffee grapefruit scrub.
Really?
Yeah. With sugar. It was basically like an old-fashioned, like a grapefruit old-fashioned
scrub.
That
is like a, that would be toning for sure.
Yeah, it was, but the only problem with that is the way, like the shower afterwards just looked like disgusting. There's like coffee grounds everywhere. Yeah. Now that I live alone, maybe that would be okay. But living with somebody else, like, you know, you just have to fully clean the shower immediately after your relaxing shower. hi y'all. We're talking about coffee today. Not exclusively coffee. We're talking about the history of coffee and alcohol coming together.
Yes, and not just in a face scrub.
No. Like just coffee liqueurs, coffee cocktails. Now, you know, coffee and alcohol, they kind of can seem like opposing forces in your world, like the kind of good and evil of productivity.
Yes.
These days, I think we're all blurring the lines between coffee time and alcohol time.
Yeah.
So might as well just talk about how we bring those things together. And I mean, they do have a lot in common. You know, they're both drugs that are created by nature to kill. Caffeine.
To kill.
Yeah. Caffeine evolved.
Damn. This got dark.
Well, in nature, like, you know, for the plants and the microorganisms that produce them, I mean, caffeine evolved as a poison to attack insect predators.
Oh.
And yeast produces ethanol to kill competitive microbes. So,
wow.
You know, they're both killers.
I didn't know that we were going to get to the microbial level.
I mean, just two sides of the same coin here.
Wow.
There was a world-changing discoveries. I mean, entire industries, trade organizations, like elements of culture surround these two products. And they're two of the most widely consumed drugs in the world, both heavily addictive. So, you know, the world's favorite upper, the world's favorite downer, they can come together. And
they do. Yeah. They do come together.
I'm feeling a very, like, this... maybe it's just been, just because I'm always, like, 5% standing good omens, but I feel like this is of a Crowley and a Xerophil.
Yes.
Our coffee and our alcohols of the world.
Yeah, but Rava and Vatu.
Oh, okay.
Mm, there you go. I brought Avatar back there, into it.
Ah, it all comes back to Avatar. Why don't you give us some history of our new friend of the podcast, coffee?
Well, I'd love to. So the origin of coffee, the legend, is very fun. It involves some dancing goats, and we love them.
What good legend doesn't involve dancing goats?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll tell you about it.
Goats are so good when they dance, when they do a little kicky thing.
I love goats. I really wanted a pet goat when I was a kid. I wanted it very bad, and I remember asking my mom, and it was just, I was surprised that it was just, like, not on the table at all. Like, it wasn't, like, a compromisable no. It was just a flat no.
You cannot have a goat.
And I was very surprised by that because I felt very passionate about wanting a goat. And goats are so great. They have, their bellies are kind of sideways. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
their bellies are sideways.
So if you know, when you look at a goat sideways, it looks pretty normal. But if you look at it, like, if you're staring at its face and looking at its body from head to tail, its stomach kind of goes out.
Oh, it's round.
Yes.
It's like a round.
It's got a round belly.
Yeah. No, goats are good. I didn't want to know the explanation of the TikTok because it was so good on its own, but somebody like reposted a TikTok that was just the little writing above it was, "That's where he was." And someone says, "Where are you?" And then this goat just crawls out from under an oven. It's like a small goat. It's like, "There he was.
There he was. That's where he was."
You got goats in your oven.
Goats are always getting into trouble, you know?
Sorry.
They're getting into mischief.
Tell me about these goats, these mythical goats.
Here's some. So around 850 AD, an Ethiopian goat herder named Kaldi noticed that his goats became very energetic and they would frolic after they ate some bright red berries of a certain bush.
Mm.
Yes. So he investigated, as you do. He chewed on the fruit and he found himself invigorated. So invigorated that he was inspired to take this discovery to a Sufi monastery. But the monk that he found there disapproved of using the fruit, and so he threw them dramatically into the fire, at which point the roasting berries made a beautiful aroma. So the monk realized he had made a grave mistake, and he scraped the berries out, and then he ground them up, and he added hot water. Voila! Coffee was born!
That's quite a gamble, just based on the good smell, you know? Because there are, like, a lot of, like, dangerous chemicals and elements that, like, smell like grape juice and shit, you know? Like, oh, wait, that smells hella good. I'm gonna drink that berry juice.
Let me drink some Fabuloso. there's also a version where there was a very tired monk that was traveling. And the monk had a problem. He would kept falling asleep while he was praying. And if anybody is learning how to meditate, you know, that's a problem that can happen. Yeah. If you get really relaxed and zen, sometimes you just fall asleep.
People meditate laying down and that just,
that's a nap. That's called a nap.
For me, that's a nap.
No, I literally, when I used to go to yoga, a shavasana, that was nap time. That became nap time. I could not get through a shavasana without falling asleep. So I get it, monk. So he came across Kaldi and his goats having a great energetic prance, and he saw the answer to his prayers. So now he could stay away for all that praying.
He needs those good goat berries.
Yeah, he needs those goat berries. So this is a really fun legend, right? We love dancing goats. It's pretty well agreed upon that this is probably a fable. We can't prove that this happened, right? This is a legend. But there are parts of it that are very true that, like, check out. We know that the native coffee plant is, like, we pretty much all agree that that's traced to Ethiopia. And we know that there is a connection to the Sufi Islamic monks using it, especially during religious practices, such as in Ramadan, when observers would fast during the day and needed to stay awake at night, so they used coffee. There is at least one person, a sheikh named Jamal al-Din al-Dabhani, who is credited as the first one to adopt the use of the preparation of coffee that we are familiar with today. And this is dated to at least the 15th century. And we know that the Islamic world at the time was responsible for a lot of trade and travel, which would have spread goods and practices around parts of northern Africa, the Mediterranean, and then later Europe. So that seems to check, you know, like we know that it probably originated in Ethiopia and was probably spread by the Ottoman Empire that was present during that time. So coffee shares at least one more trait with the history of alcohol. It was also banned by various ruling classes throughout its history.
You know, they don't want people to, they don't want their goats dancing. No more dancing goats.
No, you can't have those dancing goats. You know, this reminds me of anyone who's familiar with Major Lazer.
I showed you that. I've never not yet.
Great show. It's a little ridiculous, but the music is great. It's all Major Lazer music. It's kind of a monster of the week set up in that, like, there's a different villain every episode, and there's only one season, so it's really not a huge commitment, guys. But there's this villain called Double Cup, which is basically, like, it's all, like, kind of drug-related. So, like, his thing is cough syrup.
Oh.
And the idea is that, like, the people in the story are, like, getting kind of invigorated, and they're gonna like start a rebellion, like a movement of like people take the power back. And so the villain is actually sent by the government to subdue the people and slow them down, so he infects the water with cough syrup. So I don't know, that kind of made me think of this, that like we can't have people being too energetic. But back to history. Sorry about that. As coffee houses began appearing throughout the Ottoman Empire, some of the more conservative Orthodox imams saw that the stimulating effect was kind of a problem, and they banned it in Istanbul as early as 1511. And you could also just say, like, the idea of having any like mind altering substances like in a religion that doesn't want any kind of body modification, doesn't want, you know, like in Islam, like they don't drink alcohol at all. So the idea of like a mind altering, like, or like a mind state altering substance, like it doesn't, it's not completely unheard of that like some more conservative members of that religion would be concerned with that, right? So it was banned in Istanbul as early as 1511. But that ban was overturned only 13 years later in 1524. They just saw the benefits of it. They decided they wanted to have coffee, right?
I was going to say, there's coffee all over.
Oh, no, they couldn't stop it. And it, again, it got banned in Cairo in 1532. As we know very well, the banning of psychoactive substances does not stop the spread of their popularity.
Right.
And ironically, although it was conservative leaders of the Islamic world who were trying to ban it, the Ethiopian Orthodox Church wanted to ban it partly because of its association as a Muslim drink, which just kind of shows you how odd religious bigotry is.
That is, yeah, that's...
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, no. But attitudes changed when some major religious leaders of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church began drinking it more openly and proudly. So coffee and alcohol, where does that come in? This is a little bit of a postulation on my part.
You got a theory.
Yeah, so I have a theory. I mean, one thing I feel very comfortable asserting from all of the accumulated alcohol history that we've researched is that if human beings find a plant or a fruit we like, we'll probably find a way to ferment it.
Mm-hmm.
There is something that historically some Ethiopians would make a substance that was made from the fermented fruit of coffee, for lack of a better term, coffee wine. You know, we could say that that would be what that is. But processing coffee beans uses fermentation to remove the cherry, as it's called, or fruit pulp from the bean. I would suggest that it would probably be more of the byproduct. Processing the coffee bean gets you this fermented coffee berry pulp. And I would say that people of that time especially were not going to waste the byproduct. You know, the early cultivators of coffee probably were trying to use all of it, right? So maybe that's where we first got the idea of combining coffee and alcohol, but it certainly wasn't where that ended.
I was going to say, because coffee liqueur, as we talk about it now, is usually a different base spirit. There's no fermented coffee involved.
Right.
It's a different fermentation, and then coffee is just used as an infusion.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny, because I was looking up the word coffee, like the origins of it, and one suggestion of the origin of it is that it was initially called, I think, kawa, is how it's pronounced, which was also the name of a type of wine known to suppress hunger.
Oh.
And so because it shared that trait with that, they referred to it as that.
Okay. That makes sense.
But then there's a similar Arabic word, which is like kuwa, which means energy. So either of those could have been the original source
of
coffee. There's also the word kaffa, which is like a medieval kingdom in Ethiopia.
It's a lot of,
there's a lot of coffee-sounding words there.
Yeah. Etymology is fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all coffee.
But that is interesting that there was an energetic wine that has been referenced that suppressed your appetite, or a wine that suppressed your appetite. that coffee might be named after. So maybe, who knows? Maybe there's coffee berry wine. I've never heard of that, but maybe it's a thing.
Yeah, maybe it is a thing. You know, if you know about it, tell us. Write us.
But as far as how we usually see coffee and alcohol come together, there are a couple ways. Probably the most familiar way that coffee and alcohol come together is with coffee liqueur. Now, coffee liqueur is basically going to be some sort of base spirit, sweetened, infused with coffee, and sometimes other things like vanilla or caramel. Coffee liqueur probably was first made by the Italians. Coffee came to Europe in the 1500s. Savvy Venetian merchants caught on to it as a trend, made it very cool for the upper class, sold it at very high price points. And then from there, like, the mixing of beans with sweeteners and spirits to make liqueur followed soon after. But there was no Italian brand that launched into the international marketplace. Actually, the first big brand in coffee liqueur was from Jamaica. So Tia Maria, you might have heard of. Sort of the lesser known cousin to Kahlua, but actually predates it by a little bit, depending on if you believe it's myth.
Right, yes, the myth predates, yes. But
Tia Maria, it's made of coffee, Jamaican rum, vanilla, sugar, and comes out to an alcohol content of 20%. So the story goes, during the mid-17th century, a young Spanish aristocrat was forced to flee her home in Jamaica due to the colonial war. Now, at her side was her maid, Maria, who salvaged with them a small treasure of some black pearl earrings and an ancient family recipe that would be come to be known as the coffee liqueur that they make. So once, I guess, this aristocrat got settled, she began making her long lost liqueur and named it after the maid who helped her escape. Tia means like aunt. So Aunt Maria, Tia Maria.
I hope Maria got a little bit more than that as thanks for saving their lives.
I hope so, too.
I hope so.
Well, and I will say there's also some stories that say that the Spanish aristocrat's name was Maria, but think that, you know, this is all myth and probably made up legend.
A little conjecture.
Yeah. But at some point, there was another maybe he existed, maybe not figure by the name of Dr. Kenneth Lee Evans, who came across Tia Maria during World War II, and he was very enamored with it, began producing it himself. Now, these are all nice stories with conflicting timelines, but we do know for sure that in the 1930s in Jamaica, Appleton Rum was producing Tia Maria and actually bottling and marketing it.
See, that feels a little bit more reliable.
Yes, yes. And I mean, we've discovered this before. A lot of liquor brands make up a really cool story as to where their recipe came from.
Yes.
Because how can you can't really date a recipe to like when it came into your hands.
And I mean, the things that are, there's Jamaican rum, Jamaican cane sugar, Jamaican coffee, like.
Right.
These are things that they were growing all of the things that you needed to make this. It feels pretty natural that, like, maybe this was just like a thing that people did, and then they said, hey, you know what, we're gonna bottle this and manufacture it and make some money off of it.
And it was already a concept that had been around since, you know, probably for a century already, via the Italians turning everything into some sort of liqueur.
You gotta
Now, Tia Maria, still very much around. It was bought by Pernod in like 2005, and production was moved to Italy, interestingly enough. They actually, I believe now their parent company is owned by the next brand we're going to talk about, Kahlua. So they're not really competing in the marketplace, and they are different, subtly. Tia Maria is a little less sweet, I find.
Okay.
That's kind of it. Like, it's a little less sweet. It's a little less, like, pronounced in a drink. They've done, in very recent years, some interesting rebranding. They now have, like, a canned to-go, like a coffee frap that you can get.
Kahlua does?
Tia Maria does.
Oh, Tia Maria does.
Tia Maria does. It's, it's Tia Maria cold brew and milk with, like, foam. You can buy it ready to go. This is very, very on trend right now.
Yes.
We're going back to pre-bottled cocktails and, you know, everything's in a can. But, obviously, the bigger brand that everyone's familiar with, Kahlua.
Of course.
Very similar time period as Tia Maria. Kahlua kicks off in 1936, but it comes to us from Veracruz, Mexico. Now, so the story goes, once again, the Alvarez brothers were two coffee merchants. They kind of had this idea, them and a couple friends, one of which was Senior Blanco, who was a chemist and like a distiller.
Okay.
And then they also had a financier, Montalvo Lara. And the four of them sort of workshopped this idea of a coffee liqueur. So they had money, they had alcohol, they had coffee beans. And of course, they're in Mexico, which has plenty of sugar cane.
Mm-hmm.
It has plenty of vanilla. They started making their coffee liqueur. They chose the name Kahlua. Also conflicting stories here. Per the Kahlua website, it says that it comes from the Arabic word for coffee, kawa. But there's also this possible claim that I saw a couple times that it was named for a Mesoamerican tribe that inhabited the Mexico Valley since long before anybody else had arrived. So that Kahlua means house of the Akoloa people.
Mm-hmm.
And that could also possibly be where Kahlua comes from.
Yeah, I also read that and I recognized that it was in the Veracruz Nahuatl language, which is, we talked about that region and group of people when we talked about agave.
Right. One account I read was from a brand rep for Kahlua who gave the reference to the actual, the Mesoamerican tribes.
Mm-hmm.
But then the website says it's, you know, it's just, it's yeah. coffee. So it's
also
hard to say.
Language is funny like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things in human languages that kind of cross wires, you know.
Yeah. Maybe one's true, maybe both's true.
Yeah.
Maybe neither.
Sure.
But in any case, so we have Kahlua, the original recipe, very similar to Tia Maria. We've got coffee, vanilla, caramel, rum. It's sweetened with sugar. It was first imported to the U.S. in 1962 by a man named Jules Barman, and this action earned him the nickname Mr. Kahlua.
Oh, Mr. Kahlua.
Yeah, Mr. Kahlua was a pretty important figure for like the why Kahlua became such a big brand. We've talked about a lot in these episodes of these brands that really hit it during this time period where we're kind of seeing the birth of advertising really becoming a major force in America.
Mm-hmm.
He was a big fan of like pre-Columbian art from Mexico. And he worked that in to the ad campaign, but along with like humorous captions that created this sort of pop culture sensibility to them and made it just very trendy and cool to drink Kahlua. So helped Kahlua cement itself in the American marketplace.
Nice.
For decades to come, really. Now, of course, Kahlua, it's still around, still wildly popular. They have expanded their line in every direction. Ready for the flavor listing.
Oh my God, I was
surprised because I've seen a few out there that I'm like, oh, really? But there's a lot. There's Kahlua Mint. There's a Kahlua Especial, which is like a darker roast.
Ooh.
And it's a little less sweet. There's a Kahlua Vanilla. There's a Kahlua Salted Caramel. There's a Kahlua Chili Chocolate. There's a Kahlua Pumpkin Spice. Yeah, seasonal.
very seasonal.
And similar to Tia Maria, they also have come out with a couple canned offerings. They have a canned cold brew, and they also have a canned espresso martini.
Oh.
And if you want to know a good day to try any of these flavors out, Kahlua even has a day.
Wait, what?
Kahlua Day is February 27th.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
How they got that, I don't know, but
I think that with the days now, we're being pretty liberal in giving out.
It's like a potato day.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
like when I
if you
day.
Want a day, let us know. We'll look at the calendar and give you a day.
When's Taylor Day?
every day.
So obviously, you know, like I said, very similar to Tia Maria, very similar ingredients. You can kind of use them interchangeably with maybe a little absence of sugar on Tia Maria's part, but Kahlua is definitely the dominant force in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, with the craft cocktail explosion, as we get craft versions of basically every liqueur on the back shelf, coffee is no different. There are a lot of brands that have used coffee in new fun products in like the last 10 years or so. I'm going to talk about a couple. There's so many out there.
So many.
One of the first to join the ranks of coffee liqueur was Patron. They're actually a little bit before the cocktail revolution, they came out with their Patron Exo Cafe, which is coffee and sweetener and tequila.
Yes, so, I like that.
Yeah, that's
stimulant goes together.
It's pretty good.
Yeah,
I never tried it before, and I bartended a wedding, and that was one of the, like, I don't know if it was left as a present. Somehow a bottle got left over. And
okay.
That was the thing that I was given as, like, a thank you. I'm like, what am I going to do with this? And then it was delicious.
Yes. Just drank it.
Yeah. A couple of the products that I worked with, Mr. Black is from Australia. Now,
okay.
Australian coffee is a big thing. Like,
really?
Australians take their coffee very seriously. I was introduced to this back when I worked in the coffee world, and now we have like Toby Estates, which is an Australian coffee chain.
Okay.
The Mr. Black, they roast their own beans. They're very hands-on with like the quality of the coffee, which is something that is supposedly insured in some of the bigger brands. But, you know, I think that focus is really important, and you really taste it. You get, it's a well-loved coffee that brews Mr. Black. It's also a little less sweet, and it's much higher in coffee concentration. The base for that is a wheat vodka.
Okay.
It's interesting. So it's a departure from the rum that we're used to. Another one that's out there is St. George Nola. St. George has a lot of liqueurs that I really love to work with. This is their coffee liqueur, and it pays homage to New Orleans-style coffee.
Oh, sweet.
Oh. So New Orleans-style coffee, historically, they've roasted chicory in with their coffee.
Oh, right.
Provides sort of an earthy spiciness to it.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Now, I will say, St. George is made in California. But it's an homage to New Orleans.
Okay.
Yeah.
See what you did there.
Yeah. But they're also really, really particular about their coffee. They can even name the bean. They use an Ethiopian Yirgacheffe in their product, which is really good. It's a really good coffee. It was my house coffee at a coffee shop I used to run. So that was cool. And they include roasted chicory along with vanilla beans and cane sugar. And then, of course, we talked about, I think we mentioned this, there's also the Jameson cold brew that's on the market.
Right.
Which is, it's not sweetened, which is what I like about it. It's literally just cold brew brewed into Jameson.
Great.
Yeah. So
they're like, you wanted to do this anyway. We did it. We put it in a bottle. Here you go.
I would argue that you can still do that yourself.
You can definitely do it yourself.
But there are definitely a lot of things to play with out there. If you've encountered one coffee liqueur, if you've encountered one of the big name ones and it just wasn't for you, you thought it was too sweet, or you're a coffee snob and you thought, no, the coffee in this has not been treated properly, you're in luck, because there are a lot of brands out there that are far more concerned with the coffee end of things, just really completely different spirits than the bigger brands.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, of course, where you got coffee liqueurs, what are you going to do with them? Maybe you can put them in some cocktails.
Yeah, Let's talk about some coffee cocktails. Yeah. Oh, is Kahlua what's in a mudslide?
Yes, it's one of the things in a mudslide.
I always associate those two. Not that I go to TGI Fridays anymore.
I was going to say, you can buy the big bottle of TGI Fridays branded Kahlua mudslide. I know that because when I was maybe not at an age I was supposed to be drinking, that's what my friends and I would get. We'd put it in the blender with ice cream and chocolate syrup. It's more of a tummy ache than anything.
But is that like a play on another, like...
What, with ice cream and chocolate syrup?
Isn't that like is that derived from the idea of a White Russian?
Not really.
No,
that's a big jump.
That's a reach. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot more going on there than a White Russian. Well, we'll get into White Russian, but
sure. Well, speaking of tummy aches, basically, this is a tummy ache for me. So Irish coffee. I first encountered this when I was working at a steakhouse in Midtown. The procedure for doing it when someone would inevitably order it is that you'd take a coffee cup to the bartender, they'd put Jameson in there, and then you take it to the coffee machine, put some coffee, and then you take it upstairs to the pastry chef, and they'd put the whipped cream.
Ah, yes.
And that's basically what it is. Really, it's supposed to have sugar in there, but I guess for our restaurant, we let people add their own sugar. So here's how it came about. In 1943, a chef named Joe Sheridan was working in a restaurant in the Ireland Foyna's Flying Boat Terminal, and he was asked to serve something warm to some flight passengers who had just landed, and he combined coffee, brown sugar, Irish whiskey, all in a pre-warmed glass, and then he topped it with whipped cream. And that is how the Irish coffee came to be a thing.
It's interesting how often because that's how I was taught to make an Irish coffee. And also, in a high-end restaurant, it was very like, we're going to make it the classic way. It was like fresh whipped cream and Irish whiskey and coffee, and that was it.
Similarly. Yeah, that's it.
But a lot of people expect Baileys in their Irish coffee.
They do, and that is not what it is traditionally. I mean, I think that is a testament to how well Baileys has marketed themselves.
Yeah.
Because they are Irish, being like, this is Irish cream, this is something that you would... you want to put Bailey's in coffee because that's yummy.
Right.
But that is not what an Irish coffee is.
Yeah. Now, I will say, because I do think most people sweeten their Irish coffee, that sweetening it with Bailey's.
Not a bad idea.
It's not. Yes. I prefer that to just some brown sugar. But yeah.
Yeah.
I've had that, like, people are like, oh, you made this wrong. I'm like, no, I just made it the way that a lot of people think it's supposed to be.
Right. Well, also because the way that it's traditionally supposed to be at the restaurant that I worked at, the pastry had the big, like, whipped cream canister.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? So they'd make it, like, they do the little swirl and make it look really cute. Traditionally, you're supposed to, if you just have, like, whipped cream and you don't have that fancy canister or even a can, then you would do it over the back of a spoon so that it would float on top. Mm-hmm. And you're not supposed to mix it in. You're supposed to actually drink the drink through the cream. Right. And that is how you get some of that sweetness in there, as right. opposed to mixing. Don't try to mix it up. It's going to look gross.
Yeah.
Don't do that. I think it'll curdle, won't it? Because the alcohol in there?
It doesn't curdle, but it does that thing. I mean, you put whipped cream in like a coffee drink. You know, it just kind of makes little blobs.
Yeah. You don't want the blobs. Aesthetic, yeah. Not cute. Do they make vegan Baileys?
Do they make vegan Baileys?
They should.
I've made vegan Baileys.
That's an untapped market.
I have personally made vegan Baileys.
Oh. We might have to do a little instructional video there. I'm interested in that. Well, because I don't want the tummy ache.
No, yeah. I know, because they came out with that strawberry flavor, and I'm such a sucker for, I love strawberry milk.
Yes.
I am a child. I wanted to try the strawberry Baileys. Oh, they do have Baileys Almond, which is like an almond, vegan almond Baileys. I was like, I know there's something here.
Okay, all right.
It's not meant to taste like original Baileys. It's doing its own thing. It's almond flavored. I kind of wish they'd just made a vegan Baileys. Because you can. You don't need to have extra flavoring in there. You can just make it a vegan Baileys. But there is a vegan option for Baileys.
Okay.
But
let's talk about something else that's not vegan.
Well, it started out vegan, then we mucked it up. Another popular coffee cocktail. You've probably heard of the White Russian, but the White Russian is actually predated by the Black Russian. Now, I paired these two because one is just an evolution of the other. The Black Russian is vodka and coffee liqueur.
Simple enough.
The White Russian is that plus some cream.
Mm-hmm.
The Black Russian was invented in the late 1940s by a bartender named Gustav Tops. He worked in Brussels at the Hotel Metropole, and he created the drink for the, at the time, American ambassador to Luxembourg, Pearl Mesta. Now, he probably also invented the White Russian at the time.
Okay.
Like, he made the Black Russian specifically for this diplomat, but
the difference is so simple.
It's just some cream.
He had to think of it.
And it was the addition of cream that Topps Drinks became, like, an international success in the 60s. Because that's when we were, you know, kind of getting into a lot of sweet,
silly drinks. That was the ice cream parlor kind of.
Yeah. Creme de menthe and grasshoppers and all that. Well, that's more in the 70s. But yeah, they kind of, you know, late 60s, early 70s. Now, the recipe is first seen in California. It's printed in the Oakland Tribune on November 21st, 1965. It called the White Russian and a recipe for it. But it still stayed as, like, it was popular enough, but not, like, a big call drink until something very important happened for the White Russian.
What happened?
Well, in 1998, there was the release of a movie, The Big Lebowski.
The Big Lebowski, the dude.
Yes. If you're not familiar, it's a crime comedy by the Coen brothers. And the titular character, Jeffrey the Dude Lebowski, his favorite drink is a White Russian.
He loves him.
Yes. I wanted to look back at the movie to see, because he makes several throughout the movie.
Yes.
And I wanted, I wonder if the actor, Jeff Bridges, paid attention to how he was making his drink, if there's any rhyme or reason.
Okay.
And I will say, it's kind of like, I think it's appropriate for the character. There's no measuring involved.
No. He's made so many.
Yeah. But you watch him free pour them, and the measurements seem to be the same. He seems to be doing about, like, two parts vodka to about one part Kahlua and about one part cream. And he doesn't use the ingredients in any certain order, which I think is actually a good character moment that he kind of switches up which he uses first. You can see him using Smirnoff vodka twice, but he does specifically name Kahlua. So good for Kahlua on this. They got a big bump.
They did. I'm sure that helped a lot.
He doesn't stir his. He just puts it on the glass and, oh, wow, and goes for it.
Yeah. It'll all get mixed up inside.
Yeah.
On the way down.
Anytime somebody orders a White Russian, I feel like it's always somebody that was introduced via the Big Lebowski.
Oh, of course. Like, you wouldn't think about them unless you'd seen it.
Yeah.
Especially folks of our generation, I think.
Yeah, I will say, to its credit, it's a good drink.
It is. It's no delicious.
With the White Russian. He calls it a Caucasian a few times. Which the interesting thing is I think it's after the movie somebody decided to make a drink called the Caucasian, and that is using Bailey's instead of cream.
Oh,
so it's Bailey's, Kahlua, and vodka.
Okay.
That's
sure.
In the movie it's just a thing he calls it, as kind of a funny word.
Yeah, okay. I guess is that like a White Irish then if you use Bailey?
Well, but there's still vodka in there, but I don't know.
It's a, no, yeah, well, I guess that a Caucasian would make sense in that regard.
Because who knows where it's from?
Who knows where it's from? It's just, it's white.
It's white, yeah, it's white is the point.
The Big Lebowski. Great movie.
Great movie, great, great for the White Russian.
Yeah, good on them, good on them.
Yeah.
So the next one we're going to talk about comes after the origin of the Black Russian and White Russian, but before the movie Big Lebowski, and I'm talking about the espresso martini. And let me just say about the espresso martini. I mean, okay, so remember when we totally dogged 80s cocktails? Do you remember that?
Yes. For good reason.
Right. So the espresso martini is technically one of those inventions. But maybe the only one who deserves to stay. I'm going to make a case for it. Anyway, it was created in London, so it wasn't really part of that scene. But I'd say it's safe to say that a lot of Americans in the 80s did consume espresso martinis because it was the age of any martini. Like, let me tell you what kind of martini I make, and right. Let me tell you what kind of martini I'd like, and it doesn't have anything to do with what an actual martini is, right?
It's so, just something in a V-shaped glass.
Exactly. Exactly. It was invented by Dick Bradswell in 1983 at the Soho Brasserie. Did I say that right? Brasserie.
Brasserie.
Yeah.
Soho Brat.
Yeah. According to legend, a young future supermodel asked Dick to make her a cocktail with coffee, and he mixed her a drink using vodka, sugar, coffee liqueur, and a shot of espresso. Genius.
Yeah. Who this woman is sometimes contemplated. Naomi Campbell or perhaps Kate Moss were optioned up. I feel like this is just a bartender making a cooler story out of an already cool story.
Right. But. Because I feel like if one of them had been present at the invention of the espresso martini, they probably would have spoken out about it by now.
They would have claimed. Model.
Yeah, no, they don't have to. Yeah, you know, maybe it's a story they tell at parties.
Maybe.
Hmm. If you're Naomi Campbell, let us know. She hasn't listed the show. It would be really cool though. Or Kate Moss. So here's my thoughts on it. I don't know if you should combine coffee and alcohol, but damn if I don't love an espresso martini. Shit is good.
Here's the thing. I have worked both in fancy coffee and fancy booze.
Mm-hmm.
And I have respect for both liquids involved.
Both liquids. Mutual respect.
Yes. The only problem I have with an espresso martini is that I do think it's a good drink. I think it's tasty as hell when it's made correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to have good espresso. You can't just you've got to have good coffee liqueur, which frankly, you know, that bottle of Kahlua that's been on your back bar
that's not it.
Developing for 2 years isn't going to be great. And you have to have a fresh, proper pulled espresso shot, which is a skill that, like, it's not like bartenders are often cross-trained on how to use an espresso machine. And I'm somebody that is, and, like, God, I've been behind the bar when somebody else orders an espresso martini to a different bartender, and the bartender looks at me like, you can do that. And I'm just like, God damn it. You know, make my way into, like, the kitchen corner to pull an espresso shot, which is not easy. Anybody with coffee training knows, like, it's not just like you push a button and you get some espresso. Like, there's a whole methodology to pulling espresso properly, to even using a machine. Like, it needs to be warmed up. Mm-hmm. It needs to be seasoned, quote unquote.
Oh, like, what does that mean?
You don't want to just use a machine like it's clean from the night before and then you just pull a shot with it. That's going to be gross. You kind of want to pull some shots first to season the machine, to get all the cleaning stuff out of there, get the built up water out of there.
Okay.
Like, you want a machine that's consistently in use is going to produce a better shot of espresso than one that was just turned on or just started using it.
Yeah, the first one you pull is not going to be nice if that's what you do.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, even like with the grind of the espresso, every barista has a different way that they pack espresso into the puck. You know, you've got to kind of dial in, is the term, to get the right grind on the espresso for your particular tamp. So it's a whole process to pull a good espresso shot. But if you've made an espresso martini with I've done it before where I've brought a shot home from a good coffee shop in my neighborhood to make it, and that's fine. They can chill out. But, you know, after an espresso shot has set for a little while, it's no good. The aromatics are gone. You can't fill up some in your low boy.
Is the martini hot?
The martini's cold. But that's the other thing. You're pulling, I mean, ideally,
so you use hot espresso.
Yes.
Because you can't let it sit.
No, you're using, I mean, you can let it kind of cool down as all you're right. putting everything else in the shaker, but mm-hmm, you know, you're mm-hmm. still using a hot ingredient. You just kind of want to use a shot of espresso that has been pulled properly mm-hmm. and hasn't set too long, but is set long enough to lose the heat that's going to cause mass dilution. It's a great drink when made right, but so often people just use they'll use old coffee, they'll just use extra coffee liqueur, or just save up espresso. I've seen bartenders pull out just a squeeze bottle of pre-pulled espresso shots, and I'm like, nope, that's not gonna work. So that's,
lots of things could go wrong.
It's the pinnacle of two things that I love, so I should love this drink. And if you have one day, if I ever have a bar, I'll bartenders, baristas, they'll be cross-trained on everything, and mm-hmm. you'll have that beautiful 5 minutes to properly pull an espresso shot and make a beautiful espresso martini, and it'll be great. Mm. But to order it in most bars, I feel like the quality is just, it's still, I guess it still tastes good, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, anything with if you put enough liqueur in there, I feel like it's gonna be drinkable, but it's not, you definitely, if you're used to a properly made espresso martini, you'll notice the difference.
Now, I will say it's not the same drink, but if you can't get your hands on fresh shots of espresso, or that the hot and the cold thing kind of mm-hmm. is confusing, you can use cold brew concentrate.
Oh.
Which, it's not going to be it's not the same exact flavor as an espresso. Right. Espresso also has crema. It has some oils that you mm-hmm. get that are really nice in the cocktail. But
if you can't,
you can use coffee concentrate, and it works a little better in that it's already cold.
Mm-hmm.
It's cold infusion, so it's not been extracted via heat, so you're not going to lose anything as the heat dissipates the aromatics. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the next best thing.
Yeah, I got real uptight about that. I'm sorry.
No. It's good to know, because I am a lover of espresso martinis, but I don't think about all of the pain that it goes through to become what it is. I mean, not pain. If it's a slow evening at the bar, I'm sure, you know, and I know that it's a bar that has an espresso machine that's been running all day, it doesn't need to be warmed up, something that is in use a lot. I mean, I worked at a Greek restaurant for part of my time in service in the field, and coffee was a huge part of mm-hmm. their sales. So it was the coffee machine was on, the espresso machine was on all day. And we actually had, thank goodness, because I don't know diddly squat about the proper way to make espresso, but we had the pods, the pre-measured pods of espresso, Nescafe. You know, which is not obviously.
So it's pre-ground?
Yes. Yeah. But it's in a sealed pod.
So it's pre-ground?
It's pre-ground, but it's sealed for freshness. All right. Okay. I see you judging this espresso. But I remember them doing a lot of espresso martinis there, because it was you're more likely to have decent, I'll say decent, espresso readily available.
I mean, look, I've had plenty. I mean, I won't say that. I've had espresso martinis before because they're on the menu and I'm curious.
Yeah.
That have tasted fine. And I mean, ultimately, it's, you know, you've got stuff in there that's tasty.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to knock anybody's espresso martini if I just...
You're not? No?
I mean, I'm not... Look, if you've got it on the menu, I'm assuming you're making it right. I just think that if you're a coffee snob who thinks an espresso martini is going to be up your alley, you might be disappointed.
Okay, but there that's a fair assessment.
You can make it in a way that is really nice. It's just, it's that extra bit of work. I mean, but similarly, like when I worked at the Dutch here in New York, I mean, I worked there as a barista. Mm-hmm. And like I worked the night shift. So I was making coffee for after dinner service. And the espresso machine was a high quality, beautiful machine. And I would fairly often pull shots specifically to trot up to the bartender and have them make an espresso martini.
Nice.
And their espresso martinis were amazing.
Mm,
super cute.
I want
cute.
One right
they,
now.
They put the little coffee bean on top so it just sit there.
Oh, I love that.
Crushes. Yeah. So I'm not saying, like, don't get me wrong. I think that it's a great cocktail. Mixing uppers and downers, that's probably not good for your brain. But flavor-wise, it's great.
Flavor-wise, amazing.
It's just more that if you get the opportunity to try one that's made with properly pulled espresso, you're in for a bigger treat than you know if you've only had it made with, like, cold coffee, you know.
You know what? I should have expected that you would have so much readily available in the opinion section of espresso martinis. And I appreciate the wisdom that you've brought to this because my extent was that I like those.
Well, no, and then you're not like them. No, I'm not saying that no one should like them or no one should order them. I'm just like some bars aren't set up to do it. And
yeah, that's a good
you,
point.
They'll give you a less good product than you could be getting just because, you know, well, bartenders don't have barista training.
True.
You know, it's rare you find somebody with both and then you're in for a treat.
Hey.
But yeah, not knocking anybody's, if that's your drink of choice, it's a great drink. It's a good thing I got out of coffee. I'd be one of those like tiny glasses, like just assholes.
No. I like that you have opinions about it. And I've learned a lot in the last 5 minutes about it. I'm very excited.
All right. So another coffee cocktail that has been made in more modern times. I like this one because it's sort of the reverse of, oh, I'll just have a little bourbon in my coffee. It's, I'll have a little coffee in my bourbon.
Hey!
So what I'm talking about is a drink called the Revolver.
Ooh.
This is sort of it's a modern classic. It was created in 2003 in San Francisco by a bartender by the name of John Santer. His original Revolver was made with 2 ounces of bullet bourbon, hence Revolver.
Oh, bullet, got more. It.
Half an ounce of, he originally used Tia Maria, and orange bitters. So it's sort of like a coffee liqueur old fashioned.
Yeah. You know what? That orange was a little unexpected and I got excited about it when you said it.
And I think it makes a lot of sense, you know, like chocolate and orange go really well together.
Yes.
Coffee has a lot of chocolatey notes. Mm-hmm. Bourbon has a lot of chocolatey notes. I think it really makes sense. It makes me want to make one because I've had one with Kahlua before, but it looked like he specifically chose Tia Maria. And I feel like with some of these newer coffee liqueurs, like Mr. Black or something, it would be amazing. I don't know. But then I like the idea of a rum-based spirit, too. Like, I feel like that works better with the bourbon. Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then garnished with an orange twist. So
beautiful.
So people are still in, you know, fancy, quote-unquote, mixology bars are still whipping out the coffee liqueur and making new classics with it.
I like. I want to try one of those.
I do too. It sounds good.
Maybe we should make that one.
I think that would be a good one for the live stream. But I will say this. Coffee liqueur is really easy to make.
Really?
It's really easy to make.
We could make it?
Well, so I'm going to make some coffee liqueur. We'll get some coffee liqueur. We can compare. But I'm going to make some coffee liqueur. There's an emphasis now with coffee liqueurs on actually using good coffee. Because in the past, it's like, oh, here's Kahlua. Who knows what kind of rum it is? Who knows what kind of coffee it is? Mm-hmm. But it's Kahlua. I like the idea of combining, you know, really good rum and really good coffee.
Yeah.
And making that, it would never be, like, applicable as a product
price-wise.
But at home, you could use that formula.
Yeah, that's like a bespoke coffee liqueur.
Yeah. So I think it would be fun to just sort of nerd out and make, like, a fun blended rum base, and then, like, pick a really cool coffee to use with it. Yeah. Make some coffee liqueur. Because really all you do, and I'll describe the process a little bit more on the live stream, but you really just like let coffee soak in booze. Coffee extracts naturally in water. Alcohol is a better extractor, so it's going to extract very fast. And then you strain out the coffee, you sweeten it to the point that you want it sweetened. If you want other infusions in there, if you want vanilla or spices, cinnamon, chicory, whatever you want to put in there, you just throw that in there when you're infusing, and there you go. You got a coffee liqueur.
I love that.
It could not be simpler.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to do that in real time on the live stream.
Yeah. So,
oh my God.
Join us over there. We're going to make some coffee liqueur and then make cocktails with that coffee liqueur.
Yes, that sounds awesome. So that's going to be happening this Saturday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So please join us for that live stream this Saturday.
And if you want to play along at home, we'll post the ingredients that we're going to use for the cocktails. I don't know. I can give you the recipe for the coffee liqueur. I feel like, you know, that's kind of up to you how you like it made. But once I figure out what I'm doing, we'll put that up.
Cool.
All right.
Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you to Absurdus for our theme music. And thank you to all of our new Patreons. It's so exciting to see you guys signing up. And just a reminder, at the $4 level, you get a new sticker every month. At the $8 level, you get a new coaster every month. So those are the tiers that we have at the moment. We will add more tiers in the future, but that's what we're doing at this time. It is going to take a while for you to receive those, probably because of the postal service situation. If the U.S. Postal Service needs your help and support, and not just in buying stamps, you should call your representatives too and get them to lend their support to the U.S. Postal Service, because it's under attack.
There you go.
There I went on a little
rant. They've got spooky stamps.
They have spooky stamps?
They do. They have like spooky silhouettes, I think is what they're called.
I'm going to get some.
I want more. I ordered some, but I feel like they're going to... Now I see Patton Oswalt posted about the spooky stamps. Now I think they're all going to go. So.
Oh, well, get them while they're hot.
Yeah. Well, I love Patton Oswalt.
I love him.
Well, hey, I've been Taylor Sparrow.
I've been Liz June.
And this has been...
Neat! Coffee, 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 coffee.